From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 27th day of June, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostert. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, it's all about the food v. fuel debate and the high price of crude oil. We'll have more a bit later in the program. And then stay with us as we'll take a closer look at the speculative side of the commodity markets. It all comes up on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Taking a look at the numbers in Chicago as they settled on a Friday afternoon, the 27th day of June, July wheat futures today, 28.5 cents lower at $8.95.5. September at 9.12, down 30.75. And December wheat in Chicago, 30.25 cents lower at $9.35.5. July Kansas City wheat at $9.25, down 29.75. July corn futures 7.54.75, a penny higher. September's down 0.5 cent at $7.67.75. And December corn at $7.87, down a penny. March futures 8.03.75, down a penny and a quarter. July soybean futures 15.81.5, 7.25 higher. The August at 15.79, up 4.75. And September soybeans at $15.66.5, 4.5 cents higher. November beans down 2 cents today at $15.59.5. July bean meal at $4.27.90, up $6.70. July bean oil at $65.57. That's down 9 cents. June live cattle futures, $100.97.5, $2.97.5 higher. August at $105.10, up $1.25 a hundredweight. August feeder cattle at $111.72.5, up 27.5 cents. September futures at $113.27.5, up 27.5 as well. July lean hog, $73.20, a nickel lower. August futures down 2.5 cents at $72.70. Speaking of the hogs, the quarterly hogs and pig reports numbers were out at 2 o'clock Central Time even. As of June 1, hog inventory at 106%, breeding at 99%, and marketing's at 107%. We'll take those up in 2 minutes when we talk with Mike Zuzolo. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures are trading the August contract at $140.55, up 91 cents for the day. September futures at $140.55 a barrel, up 39 cents at this hour. July ethanol futures at $2.90, they're just about unchanged. August natural gas at $13.21.6, that's down 3.2 cents. And the heating oil is trading the July futures at $3.90.8, up 2.5 cents for the day. July propane, the same as yesterday, at $1.86.7. Gold futures trading July contract at $929.30 an ounce, up $16.20 an ounce at this hour. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 11,381. It's just about 72 points lower for the afternoon. The U.S. dollar at 72.36 is down 0.12 for the day. And the CRB index now stands at 466.44. That's up 3.17. Here's what the forecast looks like for the two-state region from our own Mike Sola. He says tonight, skies will be mostly cloudy, a few periods of showers and a thunderstorm or two. Rainfall may be locally heavy. Lows will range this evening from 62 in northwestern Illinois to 73 in the southern parts of Indiana. Tomorrow in northwest and western Illinois, partly to mostly sunny. Cooler, less humid, elsewhere mostly cloudy, a few scattered showers and thunderstorms in the morning. Then it'll turn breezy, a little less humid, some breaks in the clouds during the afternoon. Highs tomorrow will range from 77 near Lake Michigan to around 90 in the deep southern parts of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Leonard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Leonard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated joins us from his Lafayette, Indiana office. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start with the livestock numbers for the afternoon. Quarterly hogs and pigs report came out today at 106% for inventory, breeding at 99%. And the marketing's at 107%. How will the trade see them Monday morning?
Probably not too friendly. The all hogs and pigs and the Kefir marketing's on the high end. In fact, the Kefir marketing a little bit above the Dow Jones estimates. But I think the trade contacts we talked to today were more focused on the breeding number, Todd, and it seemed like most of the people we talked to in Chicago were wanting maybe more like a 98% Kefir breeding. This 99% number really puts a lot of pressure on the charts. It probably puts a lot of pressure on the fundamentals if you get a bullish corn acres report on Monday. I think the first thing hog clients and hog producers probably want to look at in the July hogs is to see if we can hold that June 11th low on a closing basis on Monday of 72.50. If we can do that, that's a really good sign. Otherwise, we might be in store for trying to test the contract lows of around 68.65. The good side of this report, going into this very important corn report, is that the cash markets held up very well this week. So we've got a little bit of support underneath this fundamentally. I shouldn't say a little bit. We've got a nice support underneath this fundamentally as we get into this corn report Monday morning.
Tell me a bit more about the contract lows in the hog market, because those are awfully high contract lows, but given the price of grain, transportation, are they able to make money at those levels, or are they taking a loss?
No, not really. I think that's a really good question, because it's $60 on the live price, and you know, you'd need about a $74-$75 lean price to get close to 60 on a live basis. You need that kind of a price at these price levels for corn and soy meal, and I think especially with the ethanol plants starting to go down in production levels, if you start to see that become a trend, then you're going to see your DDG prices start to go up. And quite frankly, the small and medium producers we work with, Todd, have been really helped out a lot by a pretty low price, low value DDG, and they've been able to come in and surrogate, you know, use that as a surrogate with their corn. If they can't do that in the next quarter, then and the hog prices do drop down to these contract lows or go below it, then you're probably going to have to see quite a bit of liquidation, unfortunately. And I think it goes back to what I've been hearing the last 2 weeks, is these same producers that have been using DDGs have been saying, I'd rather sell my corn as corn as opposed to feed it through my, you know, feed it through to the hogs. So that's probably what's kept us out of the liquidation phase that we're also worried about.
Yeah, well, I wanted to come back to that because I really hadn't thought about that. With cheap DDGs, we've been wondering why the livestock industry hasn't, especially the hogs, hasn't contracted in the past 18 months or so.
Right.
And the DDGs apparently are one of the big reasons. The other one, I think, is probably that they simply can't get rid of the sows, that it's cheaper to feed them and breed them than it is to wait and have them put through a... Well, they just have to wait to get them put through a meat packing plant. There's not enough capacity.
And if you throw on top of that the disease problems we had, we didn't have the vaccine on that disease late last year, and that took a lot of hogs off the market by just the natural implications of not having the vaccine ready yet. And we've got the vaccine. I've had it in the works for several months now in the hog production facilities, and you're starting to see the numbers, you know, hold pretty steady now, and you don't hear much about that from hog clients like you did last year at this time.
So the bottom line then is, if the ethanol plants start to either reduce capacity or shut down, the DDGs won't be available, and by default we may have some liquidation in the marketplace for livestock.
Yeah, it would be that economic substitution effect where the meal price is extremely high, the corn price is extremely high, the DDGs have been able to come in there at, you know, $165, $170 a ton and really help the hog producers, especially the small and medium people out, and still some farrow to finish guys out there that we work with, and those are the people that we really, really are concerned about, because they're most open on the end of the marketing side.
Well, let's take up the acreage report due out next week.
You know, I thought long and hard about this, and I ran it through the guys before wanting to say this, but I think at this stage that Monday's report is probably the most influential in the last 30 years. I think if it's a bullish report on corn supply, the food issue goes up another level in terms of importance. It becomes probably a national security interest, you know, for our government, and it probably also becomes a national economic issue for our financial markets, because that food and that fuel are so closely tied, and the government is so high-strung right now in trying to bring fuel prices down, and they naturally attach the corn and the beans to that with the biofuels. And just so much going on in Congress right now, so much going on in policymaking around the world. I think that this report, it's hard for me to imagine, because this is the first time I've gone through something like this. But for me, I think going back and looking at history and trying to look at it at face value, it probably is the most influential report we've seen in the last 30 years.
Well, what do you think Congress ought to do if we come out and the anchors are really different and they're really tight?
If they're really tight, I think that shows you, and then this is probably where our numbers are distinct from the other survey numbers, and that is we think the USDA is going to be pretty proactive. In fact, the FAS website has a nice slideshow of how bad the flooding was here in the early part of June that they use satellite data on. You and I talked about that last week. And mm-hmm. so between that and the June report and how the USDA got real proactive on the yield, which surprised a lot of people in the
right.
market, I really think
I think they're going to
stay proactive. And the reason they would stay proactive is they realize the seriousness and how high the stakes are. And if they do show a lower supply, I think our Congress and our CFTC will work together to try and limit the amount of impact in the markets, and they'll try and slow it down, quite frankly, whether it's by limits, whether it's by higher margins. I think they'll view it as a national security issue, and I think politically, I think both parties realize whoever wins the hearts and minds of the voters on attacking this problem, whichever party wins that, they're going to win the presidency this November.
Well, will they come out? If it's really tight, if they drop it, I don't know what you're going to consider tight. 83?
75 harvested would be really tight. You know, that's where everybody I talk to in Chicago, and I feel this way too in the analytical world, planted acres mean nothing on Monday's report. It's really all about harvested acres. So
right.
75 million harvested would be really tight.
So if they drop that, will they open CRP up on the same day and try to put at least oil seeds in the ground?
You know, you bring up a huge point. I think the trade's already onto that, because what we saw today was an extremely active DSO8, DSO9 corn spread and NOVO8, NOVO9 bean spread. And when I talked to Chicago, I said, is this the politics of limiting speculation being traded in the markets right now? And the guys I talked to said, you bet, it's that, it's CRP, and it's repeal of the ethanol mandates, and it's the fact that we are losing demand pretty fast, surprisingly. So that spread is already active because of what you just said.
Okay, we'll talk with you again next Friday.
Thanks, Todd.
All right, thank you.
You bet.
Good luck going through Monday morning. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us on the Closing Mark Report, happens on Friday afternoons.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Lernard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
In today's agricultural news, more than 100 members of the Alliance for Agricultural Growth and Competitiveness are calling on Secretary Schaefer to immediately allow penalty-free early release of non-environmentally sensitive cropland from the Conservation Reserve Program. The group cites reports from USDA as further confirmation that this year's basic crops are confronting enormous, unprecedented challenges, and an early-out CRP option is becoming more and more an urgent necessity. One of the early out proponents, Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley, has something else on his mind. He went to the floor of the Senate yesterday in another effort to set the record straight about the Ethanol and Grocery Manufacturers Association. The senator said biofuels are being made the scapegoat for rising wheat prices, even though the 2007 crop was the largest planted in 4 years. He said biofuels are being blamed for the increased price of things such as rice and bananas, which have no correlation to corn production or our biofuels policies. Speaking of the food v. fuel debate, while livestock and poultry producers would surely disagree, one ag analyst suggests that corn is undervalued at $7.50. Stuart Doan of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting reports.
arguing that the doubling of oil prices in the past year has changed the value of practically everything, American Farm Bureau Chief Economist Bob Young compared the energy content of a bushel of corn to that of a barrel of crude and says,
if a barrel of oil is $130 a barrel, then that bushel of corn is worth $9 a bushel. Just put a match to it.
The feed versus fuel debate is a difficult one within the agriculture community, pitting feed grain producers against livestock producers. Young told an Arkansas Farm Bureau crops conference he didn't pay much attention to livestock producer complaints about high feed costs until corn hit $7.
And one of my reasons for not having a whole lot of sympathy for him was, you know, here's broiler egg set in January of 2008. Significantly higher than we were for the five-year average, significantly higher than we were in 2007, and at the end of 2007, we were at very high levels. Now, you tell me that that's an industry that's in big financial stress, if it's expanding. We had more sows in the breeding herd in March of 2008 than we had in March of 2007. Now, you tell me that that's an industry that's in big financial stress.
The chicken and hog sectors are downsizing now, and according to Young, the cattle industry will too once the necessary economic signals are sent to cow-calf producers. Stuart Doan, Brinkley, Arkansas.
And finally today, the comment period for Texas Governor Rick Perry's request for a nationwide 50% waiver of the renewable fuel standard is closed, and more than 15,000 comments were submitted to the EPA during the period. EPA has until the 25th day of July to sift through those comments and make a ruling on the request. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from WILL, public radio for the farming world. I'm your host, University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, urging you to visit our website at willag.org. If you do that this evening, you'll be able to pick up our weekly look at what's happening in the world of agricultural markets, a program called Commodity Week. It's our flagship program. We hope you like it. Find it at willag.org. Agricultural economists at the University of Illinois have released a report titled The Adequacy of Speculation in Agricultural Futures Markets, Too Much of a Good Thing. You can find it on the FarmDoc website at www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu. The U of I professors argue the only way to determine if speculators are having an excessive impact on a market is to look at the number of positions hedgers are demanding. A hedger, narrowly defined, is someone or some institution, say a grain elevator, that has possession of the underlying commodity. For example, a farmer actually has corn and is considered a hedger when taking a short position, a selling, on the futures markets. Certainly, says one of the ag economists, Scott Irwin, the paper does not take up a new issue in the marketplace.
The questions about the impact of speculation have swirled around our commodity futures markets really, literally from their first day that they started trading. There were actually efforts in the 1880s to outright ban trading at the Chicago Board of Trade due to the argument that they were simply, you know, gambling dens that didn't have any connection to the real physical markets and were damaged markets. We've seen successive waves of basically exactly the same questions arise again and again. Typically, any times of really sharp run up in prices and someone short and
manipulates. 95% of long are always in the body, which could arguably drop prices artificially higher. Irwin says the data shows these funds today typically comprise between 25 and 60% of the long side of the agricultural markets being played.
If you use, for example, the corn market as an example, since 2006, the index funds and the long speculative side of the market has grown about 50%. You know, it's a big increase. We're talking about almost 250,000 contracts that speculators are holding long, more than they did 2 years ago. I mean, that's a huge number by historical standards in our grain markets. But what's interesting is that the positions of hedgers that are long their net growth is even larger than on the spec long side. And then, of course, because the market has to balance, there's only four possible positions. What's, I think, an equally interesting story is the growth in the short positions of large hedgers.
Irwin says the numbers tell him the large hedgers have absorbed all of the long speculative increase and all of the long hedging increase. He says at the time of the study, large commercial hedgers were nearly 6 billion bushels short the corn market.
So we put it this way, who's doing all the selling is just as interesting of a question as who's doing all the buying.
Certainly an interesting question, but not one taken up in the Illinois research paper. It concludes, among other reasons, because the short hedge positions are greater than the long speculative positions, the long-only index funds are not having an undue impact on the agricultural commodity markets. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Friday afternoon. We're joined now to take a look at the cash grain market by Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator's 7 East Central Illinois locations. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
New contract highs again in parts of the bean pit and in the corn pit as well. Farmers on this second day of contract highs for the week deciding to sell anything?
We are buying a little bit, not a whole lot of grain out there. One thing is, if you look at our new crop purchases, there is a huge amount that has been sold. Percentage-wise, percent of the crop that's sold already versus what any type of normal year is way up. So I think that provides some of those additional short hedges they were talking about. The farmer's a lot more sold up than he normally would be, and he's been sold out multiple years a lot further than he normally would be.
And probably at this point anticipating a much smaller set of acreage or harvested acreage in the Monday morning reports.
Yes, and sitting there looking at what he thought, if he thought he was 33% sold, maybe he's 45% sold now, or appreciably higher if he thought he was half sold. He's even higher than that. So that tends to really mitigate how many additional bushels you sell into it. And we've seen that, I think, this week in the activity. The market moves a lot more to generate selling into it. There's just not a ready pool of hedging to move into this market right now.
What has basis been like this week?
Basis has been relatively steady nearby. We're actually a couple cents better than where we were a week ago on the nearbys, but you look at it, the deferreds, those have been losing ground. Now, how much of that is just pulling bids or nervousness or trying to take some more margin to be able to finance what is being hedged out here, I'm not sure of. I think that's probably more of that than actual cash markets backing off. The export sales this week weren't that great. I mean, the fundamental news this week was demand pulling back.
Tell me about your bids for the day.
We are at 724 on nearby corn, 736 new crop. Beans, 1556 and 1469.
We'll talk to you in a week.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center.
It's National Orange Blossom Day. The orange originated in Southeast Asia. The orange blossom, which is the state flower in Florida, is associated with good fortune, and at one point in U.S. history was popular in bridal bouquets and head wreaths for weddings. The petals of orange blossoms can be made into a version of rose water that's popular in Middle Eastern cuisine. On this day in agricultural history in 1829, British scientist James Smithson died. He left an endowment to the U.S. to fund an establishment for the increasing and sharing of knowledge. In 1846, President James K. Polk signed off on an act of Congress to establish the Smithsonian Institute. In 1959, the St. Lawrence Seaway connecting the Great Lakes with the Atlantic was opened. And in 1960, chlorophyll was first synthesized by Robert Burns Woodward at the Converse Memorial Laboratory of Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts. The molecule consisted of 72 hydrogen atoms, 55 carbon atoms, and thrown in for good measure, 5 atoms of oxygen and 1 atom of magnesium. Woodward received the Nobel Peace Prize in Chemistry for his work in 1965. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Friday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center right here at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
We have a beautiful weekend on tap for us.
Well, sort of a 50-50 proposition in a way. It's going to be certainly much more comfortable. We have a cold front that will be coming through tonight and tomorrow across Illinois and the Midwest. We're already seeing storms fire up ahead of that, and that's, of course, prompted the severe thunderstorm watch for much of Illinois that exists this afternoon. And we now have thunderstorms from near St. Louis to Springfield to west of Lincoln and on into northern Illinois, where it's more like rain showers. But we'll see that increase this afternoon and the cold front go through. But over the weekend, we're going to have a pretty strong upper-level low-pressure system moving across the Great Lakes, a lot of cold air aloft. And that will actually help with the formation of some storms, possibly even tomorrow afternoon in the heating of the day, so to speak. More scattered up north of the front in central and northern Illinois, but some pretty good rain still possible in the southern portions of the state, especially early in the day. And then maybe some scattered showers on Sunday. But temperatures will be very cool. The humidity will be way down, and we should have some brisk northeast to north winds for the next couple of days before we begin another warm-up.
And then Sunday afternoon on and out to the rest of the weekend,
Sunday
sunny skies?
Sunday afternoon looks pretty good, and then Monday as well. Well, it looks like the high will move east, and we'll start to see a warm-up beginning Tuesday into Wednesday, and then it could get really warm toward the end of the week when we get another strong front coming through. Should be on our doorstep, Illinois doorstep, up in, along the Wisconsin-Illinois line. By Thursday afternoon, it looks right now, and then come through Thursday night and early on the 4th of July. That likely will be accompanied by showers and thunderstorms as it moves through with all the humid air in place. So, but until then, between basically Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, and that system on Thursday, Friday, we should have some dry days.
Okay, now tell me climatologically how this compares so far this summer and spring to previous years.
Well, in a word, wet. June has been exceptionally wet in Illinois, Missouri, Iowa. Ohio picked up a huge amount of rain the other day in central Ohio, 3 to 4 inches in a couple of storms. So much of the Midwest has been, and the Corn Belt's been very wet. The only exceptions might be far northern Minnesota, parts of Wisconsin, and then southern Kentucky. Temperature-wise, so far this June, it's been actually on the cool side, which you might have guessed a little bit. Temperatures have run about 1 to perhaps 3 degrees below normal. But well, we may be seeing that change a little bit as we get into a more normal summer-type pattern here in the next week or two.
Thanks much for joining us today.
All right, Todd.
That's Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center right here at the Illinois State Water Survey. It's located in Champaign County, the same place as the University of Illinois and WILL Public Radio. For the farming world, I'm your host of the program, University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Please visit our website at willag.org. There you can listen to Commodity Week. We'll record and post that to the website at about 6 o'clock Central Time this evening.